Okay, so welcome to Gary Weir, leading osteopath. Share with us your thoughts and experience around osteopathy and ME, chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. So Gary, tell us what you did before you became an osteopath.
I used to make a living in the surfboard and windsurfing industry for many years and was always had an interest in health. So once I came to the UK and saw the opportunity to study at the British School of Osteopathy in London, that's what motivated me to become an osteopath.
Okay, fantastic. So how long have you been an osteopath for?
I've been practicing in the UK for about 12 years now. Before that I lived with a naturopath for many years, so had an understanding of complementary, alternative or other sorts of medicine.
Okay, fantastic. And you've got a great accent, so tell us where you're from.
I'm from Auckland in New Zealand.
Okay, and now you're in the UK. So what made you move over to the UK?
Well, you couldn't study osteopathy in New Zealand in those days, and I came travelling and was able to study at the British School of Osteopathy, so that's why I've stayed, and now I have two young boys and live in Brighton, so they're in school and stuff, so I'm here for a while to come, I imagine.
Okay, fantastic. I've had and seen a few different osteopaths in my time, and you seem very different to the people I've met, and I think it may be because of your background in martial arts. How does this influence your thinking?
Martial arts is a discipline, it's an age-old philosophy, and I think when you look at martial arts or yoga, they all have an age-old philosophy, and which is about core stability, respiratory function, and nutrition is a big part of this as well. And I think what osteopathy did was confirm the validity of these philosophies to me in our current Western medical understanding. So I was able to combine the two, and I think it gets fairly good results.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, what is the osteopathic philosophy in regard to ME, chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia?
Osteopathic philosophy with regards to any condition remains the same. It's that the rule of the artery is supreme, i.e. the blood supply is of huge importance. The body has its own medicines, i.e. the body can repair itself, and structure governs function. So the anatomy of the structure of the body governs the way it functions. So we work within those basic osteopathic philosophies in regard to any symptoms we see.
Okay, and what is your experience in working with these types of patients?
I've seen numerous people with ME, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue over the years, and they've had all varying types of presentations, but sort of blanketed under the same symptoms of fatigue, of lack of strength, tiredness, so on and so forth. Some have been put down to sprays, for instance, pesticides. Others being put down to levels of toxicity, of heavy metal type buildups in the neural tissues. One lady, for instance, had a reaction to pyrethrums, which were used in the South Pacific to control flies. I've seen very varied presentations with regard to this, and managed to get fairly good results with treating people.
Okay. I remember when I was at my worst, I was in bed for a long time, and over the years this caused a lot of problems in terms of muscle aches and pains and led to a lot of muscle weakness within my body. I didn't understand back then the importance of core strength and the impact it had had. It's caused a lot of back pain for me. Thanks to you, it's now been slowly corrected, but had I been taught years ago the importance of core stability and breathing mechanics, I would have saved myself a lot of pain and a lot of money trying to get it all fixed. So what would you advise as the most important areas to focus on?
Well, we've just got to start with the basics. Breathing mechanics, core stability, flexibility, your nutrition levels, hydration levels, and your psychological well-being. I mean, just start with the basics. Breathing mechanics is so important. I mean, we can go without food for a couple of weeks, we can go without water for a couple of days, but we can't go without breathing for more than a couple of minutes, so it must be really, really important. And if someone loses the ability to control their breathing pattern, for instance, I mean, what ability do they have then to control anything within their life? So I tend to start with the basics of proper respiratory function. It might sound simplistic in its approach, but within that simplistic approach is huge and complex physiological mechanisms at work. So we start with that. We then look at linking the respiratory function in with the patient's core stability, and then building the nutrition, hydration, and all the other bits and pieces on top. there isn't a separation between the physiology of respiratory function and the psychology of well-being either. And if a patient learns to control and strengthen their respiratory function, they can also learn to control and strengthen their psychological function. That's why I think it has such good results with regard to these chronic fatigue type pictures.
Okay, so in terms of breathing mechanics, what would you suggest? Because there are people at different levels. There are people that are going to be in bed that can't actually get out of bed, and there are going to be other people that are working part-time. So what would be a good place for people to start in terms of understanding breathing mechanics?
Just how it operates, what the importance of diaphragmatic breathing is. Just assess your respiratory function. Lie down on your back, put a book on your stomach, breathe in, book goes up, breathe out, book comes down. Breathe in, book goes up, breathe out, book goes down. So you're breathing abdominally, not using the upper rib components or the accessory respiratory muscles. Then assess yourself in your workplace, assess yourself standing up. Do you have the ability to calm down your system and to breathe correctly using proper respiratory function? If you don't, learn it. I mean, you can go to a yoga class, Pilates, or see an osteopath and have that taught to you. But It really is an important thing to understand. Through proper breathing pattern, you can slow down your heart rate, you can decrease your blood pressure, it helps with all sorts of gut disorders. The list goes on and on and on. So, I mean, just start with the basics. You know, are you a shallow breather? Do you get short of breath? Are your shoulders tight? So on and so forth. And can you control your abdominal type breathing?
Okay, so if people aren't breathing correctly, what are going to be the implications to their health?
Well, it can be from period pain to IBS type presentations, any gut disorders, neck, shoulder tension, headaches. It goes on and on. And as an osteopath, you have to look at the center. You've got to look at the core, the abdominal area in any presentation, and you've got to get the center working correctly. And on the human body, that is the abdomen. And I mean, some can present with a lower back problem, and if they're not activating their core stability correctly, that can be the cause of their lower back pain, not the actual back itself. It may be the back that's presenting as being painful, but when you look at it, it's often the front that is the why the back is painful. And it's the same with a neck symptom. They may have a sore neck, but if they're using their accessory respiratory muscles too much, bringing the neck forward and down, compressing the vertebral structures, that can be the cause of their neck pain, which can lead to headaches and so on and so forth. So it's just a case of really getting the body to operate as it was designed.
Okay, and in terms of core strength and core stability, I know you've said to me that is it's really important and it does affect everything. I remember when you first met me and saw the way I was standing, it's so important to get the core stability right so that it affects everything in terms of the structure of your body. So can you explain a bit more about that?
In the as humans have evolved for bipedalism, you know, we've stood upright, but we need to understand that we have a responsibility to operate this musculoskeletal machine in a way it's designed to operate, and that you need to be conscious of the way you stand. You can't stand with your feet externally rotated, with your abdomen hanging out, with your head in a forward head position, without there being a result. So there's action reaction for everything you do. There's an equal and opposite result. So by standing correctly, maintaining one's posture, understanding proper respiratory function, hydration, nutritional levels, so on and so forth, you can then operate your machinery, your body, in the most efficient way it possibly can. And that's why it's so important to understand the core, because once you let the core stability go, everything sort of follows suit. We have to get the sacral base correct. We've got to take the muscle balances out of the equation so you can stand in an unstressed manner. Often people are standing up and muscles are balancing and fighting against each other to hold the person upright, wasting a lot of energy. And there is a way, it's very simple to learn, very simple to understand, of standing in a way that is, you know, without, so the body is at ease, basically, you know, and in a nice relaxed position. And that's really, really important.
Okay, so if that's a really easy thing to do, what tips would you give to enable people to know that they are standing in the right position?
Well, I get people, A, start with your breathing, breathe in, abdomen out, breathe out, abdomen in. As you exhale, squeeze in and up from your pubic bone, lifting and slightly posteriorly or backwardly rotating your pelvis. And when you're doing it correctly, you'll feel the medial arches in your feet starting to lift. And when you're doing that, you'll start to get your body in as near as to a neutral position as you can. So stand, breathe in, breathe out, tighten the abdomen, pull in and up or the pubic bone, and starting to lift the front part of the pelvis. And when you're doing it correctly, you'll feel a very subtle lifting of the medial arch of the feet. And quite often the poor posture is intimately linked in with the flat feet, overpronation, and then the external rotation of the feet. So make sure your feet are parallel, breathing properly, and then getting this gentle in and up at about 40% of a maximal contraction, so not a maximal contraction, and you'll start to feel your body balance a little better. It may take a bit of practice, and you may need someone to help you with it, but that's the basic way that it works.
Okay, fantastic. Now, in terms of movement, I'd love to hear your thoughts about what exercise means and movement and the importance of it in terms of our whole body and how it affects us.
I don't really like that word exercise. It sort of conjures up images of people in lycra and gymnasiums, but it's just, you know, movement is exercise. We need to be mobile, and the Western lifestyle is so sedentary. We tend to sit, we drive, we're at computers, Xbox, this, that. Get up and get at it, get moving. Understand that is exercise, that is physiological movement. That's what we need to be doing. And there's a million and one different ways to do all these fantastic exercises and stretches, but basically we need to be bending, side bending, rotation, twisting, movement, you know. And it doesn't need to be complicated. Getting out, getting walking, lifting your arms above your head, taking your body to its physiological range of movement, to its end of range, you know, within your comfort zone. That's important. You know, you don't need to be joining the gym, running on the treadmill, this, that. I mean, if you like doing that, that's fine, but you can just got to start with the basics, the stuff you did at school, the basic physical education type movement therapy is all you really need to start with.
Okay, and I think one of the important things for me was consistency, because I found that when I was unwell, I would try it for a few days, and then I would be ill and not able to exercise again. So I think it's being consistent, even if it is only a small amount a day, but continually pushing yourself really, so that you are keeping that exercise or that mobility long term.
Yeah, little and often, and don't beat yourself up about it. I mean, this time of year now, it's January, everyone started at the gymnasiums. They'll be all finished by the end of January and forgotten about it. But it's little and often. This is for life, movement for life. So it's something you need to be doing. And looking at your lifestyle and thinking, you know, burn a fire to heat water. The electricity just comes on. We have a very, very easy life. And, you know, we're not designed to be sedentary. We're designed to be moving. So it's so important. It has huge physiological effects. You know, on a cellular level, you know, it's about transference across the cellular membrane of nutrients and waste products out. You multiply that as a human body. And if you get stasis in the human body, i.e. from lack of movement, you end up with a build-up of toxicity, and it's blood in, blood out. It's fluids in, fluids out, and that's what we need to be doing. And once you're sitting there, and you have stasis, it's the analogy is a pond versus a flowing river. You know, if you have a pond that's sitting there, all the stagnation builds up around the edges. That's happening in your cells, and you've got to get it moving. And you know, that links in with nutrition, hydration, respiratory function, movement, the whole thing. So really simply, you know, movement is life. You've got to keep moving. Don't stop.
Okay, so you mentioned the importance of hydration there, Gary. So what would you suggest people do to improve their hydration within their body?
Understand. I mean, think of your cells like either like a raisin or like a grape. I mean, which one would you rather they were? If you're dehydrated, they're going to look more like a raisin. If you're hydrated, they're going to look more like a grape. And you know, that has effects of shock absorption, transference, as I said, across the cellular membrane of toxins, of metabolites, nutrients. So it's just a case of measuring what you consume. Just get yourself a simple drink bottle, refill it. You know, we're lucky in the West. We have a plentiful supply of drinking water. It doesn't need to be mineral water. Town water's fine. And just make sure you're getting about 2 litres of fluid a day, of fresh, clean fluid a day. Things like tea and coffee act as diuretics, but fruit teas and that are fine. You don't want to be taking fizzy drinks. They're acid forming. They will cause, you know, degeneration in your system. But just look at, have a drink bottle and measure what you drink. And you don't have to be 2 litres every day, but improve. Most of us are dehydrated. Improve what you consume.
Okay, that's great. In terms of pain, I know a lot of people, we've had a lot of feedback from people via our website and people asking how to manage pain. I can imagine when you do improve things like hydration, it is going to have an impact on how you feel.
A lot of pain is what we call ischemic pain, which is a build-up of metabolites, i.e. waste products from cellular metabolism, and that chemically aches your nerve endings. So flushing out those metabolites is really, really important. Understanding and controlling your breathing pattern allows you to tolerate more pain or control your pain levels better. In childbirth, women can control enormous amounts of pain through respiratory function. But, if you look at that simple thing with ischemic type pain, a lot of pain that we get in our bodies is ischemia, and that is due to a build-up of toxicity that is chemically stimulating the nerve endings, and the only way to get rid of that is to flush it out and to move it out through hydration and through movement.
Okay, fantastic. And I just wanted, you touched on nutrition there. I know this isn't completely your area, but I'd just like you to comment on the importance of nutrition.
Well, I think everybody should know what a carbohydrate, a protein, fats, vitamins and minerals are, and their functions within the human body. I mean, it is our responsibility to feed ourselves well. We don't have an excuse in the West for malnutrition, although you'll look around and you'll see a lot of people. They may be stuffed full, but they're actually malnourished. They're lacking in what their body actually needs. I think we need to be aware of the effects of the industrialization of our food chain, what that has done to our society as a whole, and what it's done to the health of people. And yes, I think it's an awareness. People need to take responsibility for what they eat, and they need to understand what they eat and the effects it has on their body. You don't have to buy organic foods. It's nice if you can afford it, obviously, but you've just got to eat fresh, clean food and little and often again. And if you're eating, people are always going about food labels and this, that, the other. To me, if you're reading the labels, you're eating the wrong stuff. You should just be eating fresh, whole foods. And you have an abundance here in this country, and there's no excuse for not doing it.
Okay, fantastic. Something else I have read and heard a lot about is that every 7 years the body has a completely renewed its cellular structure. So if that's the case, how does an illness like ME remain in our body for people who have had it longer than 7 years?
I mean, that's got to be one of the questions, doesn't it? I mean, how does it? I mean, there isn't a diagnosis for ME or chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia. You can't do it with a blood test. There's no scan. You have the trigger points, this, that. But, you'll find them on most people anyway. How does it remain in the body for 7 years? It's beyond me. I think it's almost set as a psychological or a physiological mechanism. It's probably more psychological than anything. I think people need to take grasp of it and try and deal with it. Start with the basics. Try and get themselves moving. Understand that there isn't anything wrong with them physiologically, and that if they can get their body to function correctly, then they may be able to overcome it. There may be toxicity levels for some presentations. A, understand that. Understand your nutrition. Understand your hydration. And understand that the body can deal with these things if you give it the right environment, and it will sort itself out, but you have to give it the right environment, and it's not easy often, and if people work at it, though, they generally come right.
Okay, and you have mentioned a lot about the psychological side of the illness. What would you say is your experience of working with people and your thoughts around this area?
At no point in the human body does the physiological and the psychological differentiate. From when we start off embryologically, we expand out. And at what point then does the brain and the physical differentiate? It doesn't. And the two are intimately linked. Quite often, people who want to get better will get better, and people who don't want to get better won't. You often hit a wall with some people. They have every excuse. So I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do this, I don't like this, don't like that. Those people, they're not really going to help them, and they're not going to help themselves. So it is a case of understanding what effect the psychology or the physical has and dealing with it. It's not an easy road, but it's the only way really that you're actually going to get out of these sort of physiological conditions.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we are going to be working together long term in terms of having a forum or a way for our ME sufferers to be able to have a question and answer session about different areas and different aspects. So we look forward to working with you on that. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, no, I find this quite exciting. I look forward to working with you. And if we can help people get an understanding of these processes, then great. And it's not complicated. Let's just keep it simple. Start with the basics and go from there. And that's what I would say, is just keep it simple and start with the basics. We don't have to overcomplicate these things. And, you know, I think most people will get good results with this.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much, Gary.